evening.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to the inaugural program of Booker T. Washington Speaks to Black America. My name is Marshall Musa Muslim Abui, and I am the host and moderator for this discussion show. The purpose of this show is to discuss relevant issues pertaining to the African American community, based on the guidance and the wisdom of the Honorable Dr. Booker T. Washington. We are very fortunate to be able to have a distinguished partner and friend that is online tonight, and I just want to take this opportunity before we begin to open up our inaugural program with a prayer. And this is not particularly going to be a religious focused program, but we feel that it is appropriate to give honor and praise to our Creator, who in the Arabic language is named Allah. And so we are going to begin by asking His blessings upon this work that we are doing here today, and hopefully we'll continue to do each Saturday evening at this time. So we're going to begin by saying the opening prayer from the book called the Holy Quran, which is a revelation that's over 1,400 years old, but still relevant in all aspects of our lives today. And so we begin by saying, with the name of God, most gracious, most merciful, or with the name of Allah, most gracious, most merciful. Praise be to Allah, the cherisher and sustainer of the worlds, most gracious, most merciful, master of the day of judgment. Thee do we worship and thy aid we seek. Show us the straight way, the way of those on whom thou hast bestowed thy grace, and those whose portion is not wrath, and who go not astray. We noticed that we just had a caller come online, and we had one who was waiting. So we're going to ask our caller who has been waiting to please come online, and if you would like, introduce yourself and let us know what thoughts may be on your mind about this program, which is giving us an opportunity to talk about the relevance of the wisdom of the Honorable Booker T. Washington to the problems that confront Black America. This call is from the 650 area code. So at this time, we would like to see if we can bring you online. Just let's see if we can get you online at this time, caller. Caller, you're on the line. Would you go ahead and introduce yourself if you'd like?
Yeah, Haleem Mustafa here in California, definitely concerned about where is the relevance in what Dr. Booker T. Washington stood for that would help guide African-American people to the promised land of economic independence. That's my question.
That's a very good question. And I will respond, and then I will open up the mic for additional comments. We have one other caller on the line at this time, but I'll try to make my initial response right straight to the point. First of all, we have to understand who Booker T. Washington was in relationship to African Americans. Booker T. Washington was an African-American born during the period of chattel slavery, and he was the son of an African woman whose heritage, according to my research, was Islam, who came from a Muslim society, or whose parents or grandparents came from a Muslim society of the Igbo people in Nigeria. And it's very interesting that, according to scholars, she named her son Abu Bakr, which is the name of one of the great men in Islamic history, a very close and dear friend of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. And he was instilled in Islamic values, or he was blessed to have her instilled in him, his mother, many, many things that carried on into his adult life that were based upon Islamic values. His father was a white man who, according to what I have learned, was named Benjamin Ferguson, whose father owned a plantation that was near where Booker T. Washington grew up. Now, the important point that I'm going to right now is that here's an Islamically based mind that was very focused on developing a close relationship with God and developing his character to the highest level of what we would call righteous development, and also lifting up the African-American people. So the lessons that he learned and that he imparted during his 59-year-old lifetime are still very relevant today. And as we progress in the program, we'll discuss some of these things. But one of the main things that we can say right now is that he believed in God consciousness above everything as a method of reaching the hearts of our people to rise or raise them up to a higher level of civilization. I'm going to ask our other caller at this time if she would like to comment. I do know who this is. If she does want to speak, if she wants to introduce herself, that's fine. And if she doesn't, that's also fine, but I'll give her the opportunity to have the mic. So just in 1 second, we should have the technology so she can speak. Oh, please bear with me just a second. Okay, caller from the 870 area code, are you there?
Yes. I have no questions. I'm very, very interested and want to listen to see what others are asking and thinking.
Okay, that's fine. Right now, we only have the three of us online. We do expect others to come online. So I'll go back to our caller from the 650 area code who asked that question. Do you have any response to that question that you would like to offer us, 650?
Well, I know that right now there is a problem with jobs in the African-American community. There's not a high level of technology jobs for African-American people, and even in the construction industry, there's very little opportunity, and it seems like even janitor jobs are disappearing. So it's a real concern for me in terms of what employment means will help us to get to some economic reform.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And I might add to what you just stated, my opinion is that the jobs will continue to dry up, not just for African Americans, but for others as well. But certainly they will dry up for African Americans. And the reason why I say that is because we're living in a period where there's a major realignment of resources throughout the world. Many of the jobs that existed, particularly since World War One began, since World War Two began in 1939, although America did not get into the war until 1941, but the war actually began in Europe in 1939, and the American industrial machine began to crank up to provide materials for that war, and of course it accelerated greatly after 1941, and so that put many, many, many people to work, people that had worked in agricultural type jobs, which in many cases were hand-to-mouth type existences, were able to get jobs making decent money in factories in the industrial centers of America. And then also when the war actually ended, there were many things that were already in place that could be converted to jobs to serve the war, the civilian economy after the war. Now, part of this wealth and prosperity was because American soldiers who came back from World War II were given loans to buy homes, so there was a great amount of building. And the suburbs began to develop, and a lot of businesses to serve the needs of the people in these new home communities began to really burst out. And then because we had actually conquered Europe, America had in fact become the major supplier of the necessities to the people of Europe because of the devastation over there, that created additional jobs for American people. So the whole wartime and post-wartime economy began a prosperity such as America had never known before, and Americans got used to that and became spoiled by that, especially after the Great Depression. Americans were virtually on top of the world. So consequently, the spoiled American population had a lot of work available. Now this whole economy is beginning to constrict. The Europeans no longer need to depend on America to supply the needs that the Europeans have for food, clothing, and shelter, and even agricultural products. They're well on their feet. And in addition, we have competitors. We have the Chinese and the Japanese. We have people from the former Soviet Union bloc that are manufacturing things that are being sold into Europe and South America. And this is going to continue. And so Americans are going to see a major change in the opportunities to be able to have the easy lifestyle that we have had. Now, the African-American people, who are our primary concern, have failed to generate employment opportunities for ourselves. And so as a result, when we go to the employment office and the employment counselor gives us a card and says, go to this business, they have a job available. What we don't understand is that, A, this may be a moderately sized business. The great majority of businesses that are sending what we would say requests for workers to these employment offices are moderately sized businesses, 200 people or less on the payroll. In many cases, they are family-owned businesses or businesses where two or three or four families have put their resources together to start a business, and they're not looking for other than self. They're not necessarily even looking for the best qualified in terms of skills. They're looking to bring people in that they can relate to, and in most cases, 99.9% of the cases, these are not African-American business owners. And so the African-Americans are finding that the doors are gently being shut in their face. And I only say gently because the way that the employment or hiring people at these businesses treat the black people usually is not as harsh as it has been in the past. They'll just say, we'll take your application and we'll call you. And the call never comes. So to end my, you know, part, and I see another call has come in, and I just want to, before I turn the mic back over to you, and I see that one of our callers dropped off who had asked the question. I hope that they come back on in a few minutes. But the person who I'm responding to had mentioned about the problem of African-Americans having jobs, and I was only saying, and this is addressed to our 404 caller, that the problem is going to get worse. And it's going to get worse primarily because African-Americans are not following the advice of some of our wise leaders. For an example, Booker T. Washington, also the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and his son, Wallace D. Muhammad, and many others. And they are not trying to unite our resources. Our people are not responding and applying or working towards giving our best foot, putting it forward to create jobs. And as this continues to happen, we're going to fall farther and farther behind. 650, I see that you're back on the line, and I see that the 404 caller has dropped off. So you missed part of what I said, but to summarize what I said, basically I was saying that we're going to continue to have a worsening situation until we unite our resources and form employment opportunities and create jobs for ourselves. So I'll turn it back to our caller. 650, would you like to respond to that suggestion? Are you online, 650?
Yeah, 650, I'm online now. Yes, and so as it's getting harder, the government has no plan to do anything, or they're not in a position to do anything. And where are our billionaires who have the ability to perform large building developments in construction and other aspects of urban planning that would build communities and so forth? So that's the question. Where are the billionaires at? That's the question.
The billionaires from the perspective, from the vantage point, from where I sit, and I'm not in that society, so I don't have conversations with these people. I can only do what most of us at this middle class level can do, and that's read the news and look at what we may be able to get from the public media. But the billionaires are worried about maintaining the power and the wealth that they have, because much of this money that they have is based on exploiting poor countries or poor people. For an example, the people that have made billions in the textile industry are looking at the fact that the current administration or the incoming administration, in order to boost the opportunity for the textile workers in America to have jobs, this incoming president is talking about putting tariffs on the material fabrics coming in from other countries. People overseas can make clothing and other things made out of fabrics a lot cheaper than Americans. So consequently, those billionaires who've made money in the textile industry are worried that their profits may be reduced if they have to pay enormous taxes to bring in goods that they have been bringing in the past. And if they are going to transfer the manufacturing to America, they're going to have to pay a lot more money in wages. So their concern is not a social concern, not at all. They are only concerned about protecting their own wealth. And we have to understand about the fact that the billionaires love power. They love the wealth because it gives them power, and they don't want to lose anything. I see that our caller has dropped off again from 650, so perhaps he'll come back on and he'll have heard enough to understand the response. At this time, we have someone from 706, and I happen to know who the 706 caller is. 706, would you like to participate in the discussion and make a comment? Let me turn on your mic. Just give me 1 second. Okay, 706, you're online. Would you like to make a comment? 706, I don't know why I'm not able to hear you. I was hearing the other callers. All right. 706, do you have your mic on. I have turned it on from the switchboard, but I'm not able to hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you now. Yes, would you like to make a comment?
Not at this time. I'm just calling in to listen to the show.
All right, then, in that particular case, we'll go ahead and continue. But what we would like to do at this time, we really only have three callers. One had just dropped off. We had an additional one who was asking questions, and that person apparently had to go, but hopefully he'll come back. But the thing that I would like to do right now, since we only have a few callers, is address some of the concepts that I've covered in my new book. The book is entitled Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, the Special Edition. And the third chapter is entitled The Transformation. And I'll just share a little bit of it, and perhaps you may want to comment after I share a little bit of it. Although Booker T. Washington had been producing a complete transformation in the lives of ex-slaves and their children at the Tuskegee Institute for 2 decades. He began Tuskegee in 1881. And so by the beginning of the 20th century, he was still having a lot of opposition from Southern whites to the revolution in the condition of African Americans that he was promoting. And he wasn't promoting a violent revolution, but a revolution of the character of African Americans, especially in relationship to doing for self. And in 1900, a leading Southern newspaper, the Montgomery Advertiser, out of Montgomery, Alabama, proclaimed in print, quote, "The undeniable truth is that the Negro is not fitted by nature of habits to perform successfully any work which requires skill, patience, or mental capacity. There's something lacking in their brain and in their body." This was actually printed in the newspaper. "Their minds cannot comprehend the intricacies of fine mechanical work, and their hands cannot be trained to accomplish it," unquote. And continuing with the author's commentary, the author being myself, "Putting the lie to that most fallacious," meaning erroneous, "propaganda, Booker T. Washington explained in The Future of the American Negro," a book that he wrote in the beginning of the 20th century. He said that we want to get a reputation for being industrious. We want to get a reputation for being industrious. We want to get a reputation for being skilled. We want to get a reputation for being so skilled and so industrious that our people will not leave a job until it is as near perfect as anyone can make it. Also, Booker T. Washington was convinced that it is not enough that the idea be inculcated that the colored people, we were called colored people back in those days, that the colored people should get book learning, but along with it, they should be taught that book education and industrial education must go hand in hand. And so he was a big proponent of us learning how to be industrial leaders. He says that no race which fails to do this can ever hope to succeed. Mental development alone will not give us what we want, but mental development tied to head and heart training, and of course, what he meant by heart training is character building, or what we would call in the Islamic language, God consciousness. He said that mental development tied to hand, which is industrial training, and that is not necessarily just talking about simple industries, but even the more complex industries that we see that the European people have developed and have exported worldwide, for example, automobile manufacturing, just to name one. He said that the mental development tied to hand and heart training will be the salvation of the Negro, or the African-American, as we call our people today. So at this time, we have, in addition to myself, two other people on the mic. One of our callers said that she preferred just to listen. And so I would like to ask the third caller, who we just spoke to, if you'd like to make a comment about what we just said. 706, you're on.
No comment at this time.
Very good.
Just
okay, well,
yeah.
All right, then in that case, we'll go back to you, 870. Have you a comment that you would like to make at this time?
Well, I guess what I kind of remember, I read much of Booker T. Washington's work. The earliest book, I was blessed to read his original book, Up From Slavery, and then about 6 or 7 years ago, finishing up another master's, I was assigned to make a comparison between W.E. Du Bois and Booker T. And if my memory served me, you know, I'm over 70, so I was remembering that the little feud that they were going through. Booker T. was saying, you know, let's drop our short shovels where we are and dig in the earth. And he was, you know, right. He was talking about industry. And W.E. Du Bois was talking about education and enlightenment and whatever. And while you were talking, it hit me. There seemed to have been a sabotage going on to sabotage what Booker T. was saying. Somebody put into the African-American Negro colored people's mind during that time that we didn't need to be working with the land. Let's get our minds, since W.E. Du Bois had gone to Harvard, somewhere along the line, they were people, maybe it was the northern people who had migrated to the north, felt like they didn't want to dig into the earth. They felt like, well, we get this education, we'll be middle class or upper income people, whereas they didn't understand that Booker T. was saying, you know, let's go in the dust. That's what industry is, go try in dust and then build from there. Same thing eventually Elijah Muhammad was saying. I'm thinking while you were talking, was there a great big sabotage, you know, like a third party came in with some kind of new knowledge, new language, new money, and grabbed us, you know, for them to begin to say, oh, Booker T. was Uncle Tom, and for that to be lingering for years, that even you heard when you got to college, there seemed to have been a sabotaging going on, or am I, you know, surmising a little bit too heavy? It just seemed as though who could take that right idea out of our minds at that time?
Very good question. I will respond by first of all saying that W.E.B. Du Bois was a brilliant scholar, and he was a good man, but he was an elitist. He had grown up in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and a middle-class family. He was not subjected to the kind of harsh environment that the black people of the South were every day encountering. And he, because he had gone to college and because he had graduated with a doctorate degree from Harvard University, and because he had studied abroad at one of the great universities in Germany, he had an image of himself as being what we would call a super Negro. He was one of those black men who like to feel that he should enjoy the honor and the prestige that his PhD had earned him, and he dressed and acted accordingly. As a matter of fact, some people felt that he was somewhat arrogant, and he didn't really have the sympathy for the common black people, the farm people that Booker T. Washington had. Booker T. Washington had grown up on a farm. He'd worked in the dirt with his hands as a child, helping the older people to pull weeds from the cotton plants. And he knew from his own internal soul that our people needed to have something special, something that was not a replication of European imperialistic training, but something to raise us up to honor work at the very basic levels and develop industries for ourselves. And so they had a clash. And Du Bois wanted only 10% of our people to be the beneficiaries of the higher education that he had. He called these people the talented 10. So they definitely had a difference of opinion. So I'll leave it right.
Yeah, and I remember the talented 10 thing. But somehow that it proves that Du Bois, eventually he did acknowledge that Booker T was right, but it proves that he had a narrow mind, because everything starts from the dust. You know, no matter where you were born, I mean, he was raised in Massachusetts somewhere, or up there. I've forgotten the area that he was in. You know, I think I told you I met with his wife, the second wife, Shirley Du Bois, and she wanted the Islamic schools to take his papers, because before Du Bois died, he had converted to Islam, and they were living in Egypt and Africa, and she asked Dr. Lee and I if we could take his papers. That she didn't want Harvard to have them. I think Harvard eventually got them. But you had to be kind of narrow-minded not to know to go into the dust. You know, when Jesus said, in my Father's house there are many mansions, you know, that's the earth. You go in the earth to get your dust, your dirt, your concrete, your trees grow up out of the dirt and build your homes with the wood. You have to be very narrow-minded not to realize that you have to go into the dust. Now, I don't know, you've explained it very well, better than I've ever heard anybody else, what was on his mind. And I just can't understand how you could miss that. As I said, he eventually realized that Booker T. Washington was right. But it seems as though there was a third party. There's always a third party in there to sabotage. And maybe they recognize if the blacks had caught on to, stuck with the idea. You know, Booker T. had them making their own bricks, and they were very good people, good masons, because one of the best masons we had here in this town graduated from Booker T. Washington, from Tuskegee, and was taught brick masonry at Tuskegee. And I heard you on another show where you had spoken in a college someplace where you said they had a kennel or something where they made their bricks, and had they continued even with that, that would be some kind of industry. So it just seems somebody came in with a sabotaging plan, because I can't believe black people didn't see that for themselves, that it would be industry going in the dust to build and be solid, or else that they were afraid that somebody wouldn't let them go on any further. I've heard that, too, that they only let you go so far. I don't know what they mean. I wasn't born in that era. But it just seems like a great big sabotage had to occur for that to be cut off.
Very good. That I see dream. That our caller 650 has returned, and we just want to just mention that the caller who just spoke was addressing the question of what happened to and I don't want to misspeak and not relay what you said, but what I would like to say is that the question, as I took it, was, you know, what happened? Was there a third-party influence that caused people to shift away from Booker T. Washington? And also, what influenced W.E.B. Du Bois to turn against the philosophy of Booker T. Washington of training the head, the hand, and the heart to uplift our people? Understand that in 1895, in September, Booker T. Washington was catapulted to national fame when he gave a speech to a predominantly white, powerful audience. There were many black people in the audience as well, but this particular fair that was held in Atlanta was basically put together to impress the white people from Europe as well as the middle-class white people from America that the South was rising again. And so Booker T. Washington gave a very famous speech. Some people call it the Atlanta Compromise speech, but it is definitely a legacy and a historical speech. And Du Bois sent him a telegram immediately and complimented him on this particular speech. And then within a 2 or 3 year period, he had actually turned his back on what he had formerly said to complimenting Mr. Washington or Dr. Washington. But here's my point. Around this time, W.E.B. Du Bois, who had been in Germany, who had probably been influenced in Germany by socialist or communist ideas, became a communist. And the communist agenda was to use the black people, to exploit the black people, to try to start a revolution or a racial conflict to try to undermine the American capitalist system.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So as he got deeper and deeper into the communist movement, Du Bois became antithetical or antagonistic towards the ideas of Booker T. Washington, which in his mind were the opposite of socialism or capitalism. They were more in line with the capitalist idea, especially since some of the big capitalists like Rockefeller and Carnegie and Rosenwald were giving millions, literally millions of dollars to Tuskegee to help train these new industrialists that Booker T. Washington was developing. And so the communists did not like that. And their point man or their main spokesman to black Americans was, guess who? Dr. Du Bois. But I see that our caller from 650 is back with us, and I'd like to invite you to join us again. We were just responding to a question that one of our callers had asked about a third-party influence that may have divided Du Bois against Booker T. Washington. Would you like to comment on that or any other topic, sir?
Yes, sir, I certainly would. I know I'm familiar with the Tulsa, Oklahoma incident where there was a black community that was very progressive that was conspired on and destroyed. So there is, I guess, these third-party secret order people who I think are government connected, certainly. I guess my comment is that it's going to continue to happen as long as people want to keep black people slaves, right? Because if we become free, we become economically independent, then we become a threat because we can also outproduce other people because we work hard when we really work.
Absolutely. And the one thing that I would like to point out, because you made a very important point concerning people wanting to keep black people slaves, the fact of it is that black people would not be in America, especially in the numbers that we have in America, if the exploiters, if the labor capitalists had not wanted to have us here to be slaves. That attitude has not changed. I think we delude ourselves as a people by believing that the purpose for our existence in America changed in the 1960s as far as the exploiter's perspective is concerned. The exploiter's heart has not changed. The same, what I would call selfish bloodsuckers that conspired to buy us from slave traders in Africa, and don't think that we didn't have slave traders among our own people, just like we have slave traders within our own community. We won't go into the details about what I mean by that right now, but we have people that are selling drugs to our people, which are making them slaves to narcotics. We had people that were starting small and sometimes larger tribal conflicts so that they could capture people from other villages just to sell them into slavery. But the point of it is that this exploitation of humanity was brought to a higher level by the European imperialists. They basically perfected it. And we, of course, are the recipients of their skill at making slaves. But their attitude about us being slaves has not changed. It's just taken a more sophisticated turn. And what Booker T. Washington sought to do was to make us realize that we didn't have to be in slavery to the people that had brought us into slavery. We didn't have to remain slavery, but we have allowed ourselves to stay in slavery by becoming beholden to them for food, clothing, shelter, and everything else that we need because we have failed to go for self. In a way, I'm going to go back and invite comments. We'll go back to 706 and see if you would like to make a comment first. 706, would you like to make a comment?
No comment at this time. Thank you.
Okay, so let's go to 870, and I ask you if you'd like to respond to what we just said.
No, I think what the 650 fellow brother said about the, I think he was talking about Black Wall Street, and I think in every little southern city, I think even in Tuskegee, I think I heard you define that or describe it. We had a successful Black Wall Street, even in this little small town, there was a Black Wall Street. All the Black businesses was on this one street kind of around the corner. And what they did in Oklahoma was burn it down. They didn't burn it down here. They just brought an influx of, I hate to sound like this, but very, very, the rural people put their shovels and hoes up on Saturday and bring them in to the town, and that began that fighting and arguing and just got so it was a, when I grew up, it was known as a bad street. My father and them remember it being a pride to Black people. You had your Black funeral homes, your Black beauty shops. Dr. Young had his own pharmacy there. You had some Black liquor stores, taxicab company. We had everything that we needed, grocery stores, sort of in a little L. Well, actually, it was a couple of blocks. And we were doing almost, I guess, what we had two or three funeral homes in the area. And we had a Black bank. We were doing what I guess Oklahoma was doing. And it does just seem to be some plan or something. How they do it, I don't know. I think it comes around down to what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, having knowledge of self. If we had knowledge of self, we wouldn't get tricked out of all of this. But, you know, they bring in the influx of another people who are envious and jealous and of the accomplishments, because there was a college here that they gave us during their Reconstruction period, a land-grant college, and the Blacks were very successful here in this town. It was the mecca for Blacks to rise and become successful. We had our several lawyers, several Black doctors, our own Black clinic. I've forgotten about all of that. And Black studios, a man that took the best of pictures, competing with any Caucasian studio. So we had a lot of, and we didn't have to, we had grocery stores. So I heard this Alex Jones, the one that started this InfoWar, saying that they're bringing in all these Mexicans and immigrants, and many of them are on welfare, to break the middle class, and it does seem to be the fact. And I just wonder if they didn't bring in, you know, an influx of our rural people who came very envious. And even right now, Caucasians have left the city. It's 80% Black, and most of these are the rural area people who are, you know, watching TV and get jobs and got homes, came up and bought some of the white folk homes, big, beautiful homes. Now, they have the finance, but they don't have the culture, the social grace, and proper protocol. And the city is horrible. It just seems to be a plan. That's kind of what I want to throw out there tonight. It seems to be a plot and a plan. And they don't hire the highly evolved black person, they bring in those that you said a few minutes ago, they can do a little work. No, that was a comedian, George Carlin. They're intelligent enough to be mechanical, do some work, but no proper protocol, no social grace, and they make the money and run home. And I hate to say this, but they bring the outdoor toilet mentality, and the city has just gone to the dogs. Even though they got money and got big homes, there is a plan. That's all I'm trying to get to. And it does look like the Honorable Booker T. Washington and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was hitting on the very plan that was needed for the black man. Are you there?
I want to. This is caller 650.
Yes.
I want to know the comment.
Well, did we lose Imam Musa? I think we did.
Yeah,
hello.
Can you hear me? I'm online.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. The brother was talking. I think he was trying to tell us something.
Sorry for the interruption.
I want to make a 650 area code.
Yes.
Helen, stop it. I recall Richard Pryor saying, we got some new NIGGs, when the Vietnamese War was over. And I reference that point because even though we have we want to work, I think gentrification is a real underlining destruction, dismantling of the black communities across this country. I'm talking
mm-hmm.
today's time.
Yeah.
Because they come in with all these big shopping centers, and they take away the little small mom and pop stores.
They did.
And then there's no cohesive socialization of the people who live in that community still, and so therefore there's no socialization. Then they become isolated. I'm talking we, because I'm the part of that whole situation. And then we just forget about how important it is to stick together in unity. So I think we need to address the gentrification situation that is taking away urban communities by making these big whole store Walmart and what have you. And people on the Walmart board are people, both Republican and Democrat. I know for sure Hillary Clinton is one, and some other Republicans. So she's a Democrat, but she's on the Walmart board. And,
oh, she
and
is.
So they're making money. Yeah. But no one's exposing this stuff. No one's exposing this thing. They're just thinking, oh, okay, this is, it's business as usual. But, no, it's a strategic business as usual, dismantling.
Yeah, but I think they start a little earlier, before there was the Walmart and all, and break down the middle class and then, the upper class keep moving, keep getting richer. And I think it is a plan. I think it's a, they're doing it to their own people now. In other words, the reason you have your right wing, your Tea Party people, they realize, and they're using Malcolm X words, the Tea Party years ago when they got started saying we've been bamboozled, and they were right. See, they thought it was just the blacks, but they realize now the elite in the upper echelon of Caucasians with money, billionaires, as you spoke of, they were tricking them. They made them think that they were a little bit above the black people or any other minorities, but they were using them. And that's when you got your Tea Party started, and it, somehow it, moved into where Alex Jones and the Dredge Report and the all of these people, and then they united and got in behind Trump. And now Trump in DNA says he's from the same people that's been tricking the people all along. His grandfather and great-grandfather, and the DNA says that it's in his blood, in his bloodline. But they believe him. I don't trust that he's going to do very much. I think he lining himself up with all these generals, they think they're going to. Just yesterday he talked about upping the arms race. He's getting ready to go in and take oil, and he said, let's just take the oil, and they're going to make a lot of money. And to take care of their families, somebody mentioned that earlier, for the next few years down the line, and everybody else be damned. I don't really think he'll do a few little things like he did Carrier, and it'll look like he's bringing in jobs or bringing things back. But I think it's a scheme, and they sit behind doors and plot and plan. And I hate, you know, I don't want to embarrass Imam Musa, but the black man got something else on his mind. He plotting and planning on other things that tears down family and his nation, where that Caucasian is sitting up plotting and planning on how to stay in power, how to stay on top, and how to use the next people. Because as soon as you start getting a mind, they bring in the lower level that needs, like the lower level Muslims or the lower level Mexicans or the lower, they just keep exploiting people, and people keep falling for the game. And I think we have a better chance than any other people to follow what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was trying to do, and because we have an excuse. He said we didn't set up segregation, they did, so let's take advantage of it. I think the Honorable Booker T. Washington was a forerunner, and I really don't know what happened there. How was it sabotaged? I think they do a little mind control. I think they do, you know, we just need to wake up and care about ourselves a little more.
Well, Erico 650 with a comment, if I could.
Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. I think that the television and the manipulation of the films all contribute.
Yeah.
Because it keeps people entertained on the lower nature, and then that lower nature becomes just, almost like prostitution and pimping on daily basis. And then our young people, they develop these same attitudes, and then they start rapping and dapping and talking all that negative language. And you can't even get on Sunday morning, you hear some stuff on Sunday morning from the vulgarest rap songs and stuff, and that behavior is setting a standard for the next generation. So I think we need to cut the TVs off.
Yeah, well, Elijah did tell them in the early days, don't watch it. But it's a plot. It's a plan. I think they got step one, step two, step three in some organized plan, and they keep it going. And who's pushing the rap artists? Who's got the money and keep pushing them? I mean, it's still a plan. They still got their hands in and in control of, you know, I remember George, Vice President Gore's wife, she tried to start a movement to stop the vulgarity, and they sort of pushed her aside. It just didn't work. They know what they're doing. I think the plotting and planning, the only thing that was combating that, I got to say it, now I followed Imam Wahdi Muhammad, but the Honorable Elijah Muhammad had the right plan. He said, don't look at TV. Separate. And it just seems to have been working. And we were already in Peru. We were already in Japan. We were already in the islands and doing commercial work. Something went wrong.
Let me break in for just a minute. We've just got a few minutes left, and I have noticed that we've had a couple of callers that have been waiting. So I'm going to invite a caller from 407. Would you like to make a comment based on what you've heard since you've been online?
Well, I was just wondering who you preferred, was Boyce or Booker T. Washington. Which person do you look up to more?
Well, if you're asking me that question, I'll answer it. But let me ask one of our other callers, because I'm the eldest male descendant of Booker T. Washington, so naturally I'm somewhat prejudiced in his favor. So I'm going to ask our caller from 706. Caller from 706, would you like to respond to that? Caller from 706, 724-9724. Are you online? I'm not getting a response.
Yes, I'm online. Can you hear me?
Yes, would you like to respond to the question that our caller just asked me?
Well, I tend to favor Booker T. Washington, and I learned about W.E.B. Du Bois and other people in high school. I had a college professor to teach black history to me in high school. And the reason why I favorite Booker T. Washington is that looking at today's world, today we have all these people who are college graduates and they have no jobs. And
right.
You have people who went to a technical school and they have better paying jobs or they have jobs, period, as opposed to, so I just, looking at it from that perspective and looking back on what Booker T. Washington was doing, teaching people to be industrious and do for self or making your own, whatever, I tend to favor him over, I mean, you know, it's okay to have, I think we really need both. Mindsets. You need academics today. I think we need academics, and we also need but not only that, we need social skills, and we also need to have street knowledge. So maybe I'm a little I don't know, biased, but I think that We have people in this world who don't even know how to fry an egg, you know, and that's sad. We have people who don't even know how to boil water. Okay, there's something wrong with that. There's no critical thinking skills at all. I don't know if you told me this, Imam Musa, or if I read it, that, you know, Booker T. Washington had somebody teaching a science class and he overheard the people teaching, and he went outside. He brought some kind of plant inside the classroom, and he told the professor that he had this plant outside, and he needed to use, you know, hands-on stuff so that the people could develop a more critical understanding of what they were studying. So I guess I'm very biased in that sense. So that's my response.
Well, appreciate that. I've only got less than 3 minutes left, and I had a caller whose number I don't recognize because it's a very strange looking number from 111. Air code 111, are you there? Air code 111, are you there? If that person is actually a phone or a robot that just dialed in, so I'm gonna go ahead and take that person off the mic, and I'm gonna ask our brother from 650, would you like to respond to our caller's question?
Yes, I certainly would. Yes, I certainly would. I think it comes down to is that everyone has to work. Even the intellectuals have to work. I mean. And I think that the leadership that Dr. Booker T. Washington stood for was that he worked as well as he talked about what needed to be done. And he was wise enough to hire a great man, Dr. George Washington Carver, that really set a tone, that really helped the black farmers and the white farmers eat and live better off the land. And so I'm a proponent of Dr. Booker T. Washington because he had the courage to say it when no one else would say it. He had the courage to do it when no one else knew how to do it. So that's my opinion.
Can you all hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
We're about to wrap up. We certainly appreciate everybody's contributions this evening. Our caller from 407, I don't know if we adequately answered your question. I know I didn't go into a lot of detail. I gave a sort of a disclaimer so that other people could speak. But we're going to continue this conversation on next Saturday, if you can join us again, at 9 p.m. Eastern. And we'll get into this discussion about Du Bois versus Washington. I think that's an important discussion. Personally, I will say as we close that I admire both of these great, great giants, intellectual giants. But I think that in the time that we're living in now, the philosophy of Booker T. Washington is the one that will help us move forward. But we can take both sides of this question as we continue next week. We want to say thank you all. I know that there are other things that you'd probably like to add. You can call me offline, you know, as we have been talking, all of you except a couple. If you want to call me 407, my number is 706-399-5000.